You are tuned into Business Sense on Adventist World Radio, powered by SID Media.
Now, as we stand on the cusp of a technological revolution, self-driving cars have emerged as a symbol of innovation, promising a future where commuting is not just efficient, but also apparently safer, right? The reliability of self-driving cars is as crucial. It's actually a crucial factor in determining their widespread adoption, right? They've got to be reliable. If no one's going to be on the helm, then it's got to be solid. And remember earlier on, I'd asked you to say, would you go into one? Would you consider taking one? Of course, here in Southern Africa, they're not yet as popular. I mean, really fully autonomous cars are not yet as popular. We still have the lane keep assist. We're still dabbling in the other assists, such as technological, adaptive radar cruise control, and so forth. But fully self-driving, we're going to be talking about that. And I want to hear your thoughts, your comments as we discuss with the experts. Plus 27734703520. That's again, number again is plus 27734703520. Do get in touch with us right here. And joining us on the line to share his thoughts and his comments on this topic is Iman Nyirenda. Good evening to you and welcome to the Business Sense.
Good evening, Derek, and good evening to the listeners.
Thank you so much, trusting that we find you well on this Tuesday.
No, I'm fine. Long day, but we're here.
I can imagine. Which parts of South Africa are you joining us from, sir?
I'm joining from Brits.
Oh, you're in Brits. Is it chilly there? Brits is usually warm. Is it chilly? I mean, the side of Pretoria winds and cheer, and we started off the day at -1, spent most of it at 0. I don't know. How is it looking there?
And no, we have an interesting climate because it's more of a desert. So there isn't much vegetation. It's warm when it needs to be warm, or very hot when it needs to be very hot, but very cold also when it gets cold.
Oh my.
Yes.
Oh, so you're kind of having a chilly weather at the moment.
Yes.
Hey, best we can do just to keep warm, sir. Hoping you're keeping warm.
Yeah.
and I think if you were in a using a self-driving car, you could even have a blanket around you with a warm cup or both arms on it. Let's talk a bit about that. Self-driving cars, they're not that much of a new concept. I mean, we started seeing these back in the day in those those sci-fi movies, and they would say the future of what, you know. They're not that new today, you know, in this technological age, but some questions still remain. And I was saying that we don't really fully have that kind of technology yet this side of the world, do we? Are they that much safer though?
No, not at the moment.
Okay.
It's a very aspirational idea, one that if we could get it working as the human race, would save us many lives and cause less congestion and all kinds of benefits. Yes.
But you're looking at, I mean, you look at the West, especially your big companies, your Teslas and so forth. Everybody's going that route. And I mean, Tesla, I think, should be actually having a couple of those fully autonomous vehicles to date. Are you saying those are not yet being granted as a safer option in terms of a mode of transport?
No, what Tesla has actually done was to try and circumvent the testing that would be required to get this, you know, certified deemed ready for mass rollout.
Mm-hmm.
They have invited drivers to say, you can join our program for testing these vehicles.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a caveat. The caveat is that you must pay. You must actually pay them $25,000 at the last... last I heard. So you take part in this campaign where they're trying to get to see how these vehicles will perform in the real world. there isn't really a car that drives itself like in every environment. It's just in few environments, like say we could say Pretoria only or Pretoria CBD.
Mm-hmm.
And you get drivers to just be there to make sure that if anything stalls, they can, you know, take over as the human driver. Mm. Yes.
Maybe take us through a bit about what actually we're talking about, just to get our listeners on speed, up to speed. When we say self-driving, what actually are we talking about here?
Okay, so there's a number of things that big companies have been talking about, and insurance companies will also be interested in such things, mm-hmm. where they're trying to save lives. They're trying to make driving less of a hazard and try to make everybody reach their destination. It is no secret that, you know, human beings are, you know, at the best times, we make mistakes. Even when we're concentrating as best as we can make mistakes.
We even have a term for it, don't we? Human error.
yes. So we're trying to get to a stage where a car would control itself, okay. and avoid such situations where you would make a small mistake and someone loses their life. Yes.
And so now, I mean, I was talking to the listeners earlier on, we've got some technology that kind of draws close. We started off with, they call it Lane Keep Assist, I think it is, where the vehicle kind of learns and with the assistance of some technology, measures the lines and kind of turns, and you can almost go away with some 10, 20 seconds of having your steering wheel, your hands off the steering wheel, and it kind of guides you across. There is also, I think it is adaptive cruise control, where you can set it and it measures the car in front of you and so forth. Is that part of what we currently are having leading towards this fully autonomous vehicles, or is that totally something different to the self-driving vehicle?
No, that definitely feeds into that. Mm-hmm. Definitely feeds into that. There's a few levels, according to experts, that would be classified as automation. So mm-hmm. you've got level 0 up to level 5, and okay. I would just like to share this with your listeners.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so level 0 would be warnings and momentary assistance. So what that would feed, or that would be an example of, is your lane keep assist.
Okay.
If you veer off the straight ahead, then it would, you know, the shake from the steering wheel or a beep or anything like that that tries to warn you that you're veering off course.
Okay.
Then there's level 1, which would be your steering, brake, and acceleration support. So that would be cars that we have today that, you know, if there's a car in front of you that is, you know, you're getting too close to it, it can brake, apply the brakes for you without you doing anything. Or if it senses that you're taking too long to react to the situation.
Okay.
And then level 2 would be steering, brake, and acceleration. It looks like the one before, but there's a bit more involved here, because you would have your cars that you can actually leave the steering wheel and it can drive maybe for 10 minutes if it knows the environment. That would be your Tesla.
Okay.
And then you'd have level 3 is a car that will drive itself under limited conditions. So if I was to say, okay, I'm relatively on a straight road, it's flat, they would give you certain conditions and say that you can only activate this if you meet these certain conditions. Then you can leave the steering wheel and then the car will take over for those few minutes. It's almost like your autopilot on those commercial planes.
Mm-hmm.
So Mercedes has a car like that with the latest S-Class that can do those things.
Wow.
You know, for a few minutes you can leave the, you know, steering wheel.
Okay.
But I'd like to also point out that there was at one stage a Lexus, I think was top of the range, LS 600, that had a self-parking, you know, where you would, it would tell you, okay, if this space is so big and that space is that big and the space in between is this big, then you can leave the car and park itself.
Hmm.
So then you just activate that function and say park yourself, and then the car would park itself, and you wouldn't need to do anything, not touch any brakes, not touch any steering wheel or anything like that. And then the fourth level will be a car that drives itself under limited conditions. So if you were to program this car and say, okay, you've got the map of Pretoria,
okay,
let's say Arcadia, you have programmed that map into the car. The car would be able to say, you could be able to say, I want to go to the corner of Beatrix and whatever street, and the car would take you there without you making any inputs. And then level five is where we want to go, where the car
the
can drive itself under all conditions.
Okay.
Yes. So there's still quite a lot of work that needs to be done before we can get there. And this is what we're going to be talking about today, about the challenges and, you know, the things that we're learning as we go along. Yes.
Yeah, I was, though. I mean, when you talk about especially level three, those vehicles that, especially level three and four, the self-parking and whatnot, I was thinking that, I don't know why, I thought that we were already there, you know, like some top-range vehicles, most of them, what do they call them? Flagships, right, would already be on that level where they can, I know, just press a button and the car can kind of leave the parking lot and come to where the key is. But it's quite fascinating that actually there's still very, I think it's the media and the coverage that those few vehicles and especially the prototypes will receive that we think, oh no, this is everyday life in some other advanced world somewhere. But here you are saying actually it's not really that prone and that popular.
No, we're not yet there.
Mm-hmm.
There's quite a number of you know, there might be things that we can, in perhaps getting too excited about the future and what it holds for us, we can try and get there too soon. And then once we are there, we start to realize that there's a lot more at stake than just, you know, bragging rights and things like that. That's where legislators would come in and say, no, but, you know, there's dangers to this and there's danger to that. You know, those kinds of things where you find one situation then shows that the system is vulnerable and it's not yet at a stage where it can be put into mass production.
Yeah. Yeah,
and then a manufacturer would pull the technology back and say, okay, we need to iron out some things before we can sell this to the public.
I think it's quite fascinating. Yes. I think one of the issues that would come out is the fear of hacking, I think. And one would say if, I mean, you were talking about some vehicles, I think it's level four where they can drive if you've got a map of an area and so forth. Or even level three where you've got about 10 minutes or so where you can kind of be letting it do the work, most of the heavy lifting. Who caters for if a car like that goes into, because I was thinking, how will it manage to know that the car is coming like this and to overtake and to do all those things? Who if a car goes into the accident, who is liable there?
These are some of the ethical questions that we still need to iron out as or manufacturers need to iron out. For instance, there's quite a number of things that you will become aware of when you start putting these things into practice. Okay, let's paint an example where as a driver you would know that okay. You scan the environment in front of you and you see that there's a school nearby and you know that okay, the automatic thing is to do what?
Reduce speed.
Even if there's no child on the road, I mean, the automatic thing is for you that, you know, a child could come out of nowhere and just run into the road and you would reduce your speed and be on a higher alert. The computers do not actually have these things. They are programmed by people. I mean, if you were to program a car and say, if there's no obstacle and the road is clear, you are, you know, to maintain whatever speed you're doing, say 100, and you're driving through a school zone, who should actually take the blame for those things, you know, because a programmer wasn't necessarily thinking about a school zone when they were doing that. They were thinking about the highway. But now you've got a situation where the computer, but now, you know, make a decision that as a rational human being, you would be able to make. Another example would be that, you know, there's things like shadows and things like that, where if you don't necessarily see an object, but you see a shadow, you'd know that there's something there.
Coming,
if a child, you see a child, maybe there's a bus parked there, and you see the shadow approaching the bus, you don't necessarily assume that, no, the child has gone onto the bus. You must, you know, take into consideration that this child could be crossing to the other side of the road. A computer doesn't know those things, you know. Those are things that still need to be ironed out about such things. If that child was to just suddenly appear out of nowhere, what does the car do? I mean, apply the brakes, and then what happens? Who takes the blame? Those kinds of things are things that still need to be ironed out. And one interesting thing that was pointed out while I was, you know, reading up or doing research on these things is that it takes a child 10 to 12 years for them to, you know, get the grip of motion, perceived motion, you know, that kind of thing.
Situational awareness and so forth.
You know, awareness of, you know, someone's intentions and all those things. It takes you about 10 years for you to, because you trip and fall, you know, you learn from those things. A computer still needs to get to a stage where it knows about intentions and, you know, those kinds of things. And those are things that are going to take a while for manufacturers to get right. That's why you have seen that actually as early as 2014, people were predicting that, no, by 2015, they'd have a fully autonomous car. And 2015 came and went. And then it was said, no, it will be 2016. 2016 came and went. And then, no, 2021, definitely. And 2021 came and went. And here we are still today. We still don't have a car that is fully autonomous. So that we can say, no, this car is really self-driving in all conditions.
You know, you were mentioning this idea of the awareness of the vehicle and its predictability of what would come next. I mean, one of the things that usually I think we were trained as you were driving, you know, in the K53s and the whatnots, is that if you see a ball rolling onto the road, immediately you start braking because, you know, what follows a ball is a child, you know. And so you might not see them, but they're coming somewhere very soon for the ball. So you need to be aware of that. And whereas if it's a computer, it just thinks it's a ball, it doesn't need to slow down for anybody. Let's talk about the you were mentioning the science behind it earlier on about the five levels, right? I'm just trying to think what makes the car able to then drive. Is it just the presence of a map? I mean, you're talking about it level four, you input a map and it can go around town and so forth. Is it the assistance of cameras? Is it GPS location? Is it satellite movement? I'm just trying to see some of the science behind it. Now, what's the technology that will enable a vehicle to be able to do some of the things it does? Because I'm thinking, for example, we said at level one or two, you get things like adaptive cruise control. And that means is it just because it's able to see exactly where it is? Or is it just a sensor to say the car in front of me, which is not really something that's beyond its natural environment?
Okay, there's a few technologies that have been tried and tested. I think maybe that this is where engineers and the likes of you know, the CEOs or owners of certain companies were thinking that it's going to be just a walk in the park, and you know, it's just a matter of connecting sensors and cameras and making them talk to each other, and then we'll have a fully autonomous car. But there's a number of things that we talk about: LiDAR, we talk about radar. There's also another level of AI called CNN, which stands for Convolutional Neural Network, which is basically based on your neurons as a human being. That, you know, there's so many things that your head or your brain scans before it makes a decision. It's not just, you know, I can see, I can hear, there's emotions involved. There's, you know, so many other things that, you know, your brain takes into consideration before you make a decision. So LiDAR is what has been used by militaries to scan the environment to see where enemy bases are and all those kinds of things, you know. It is very dense in information. You can scan, you know, if you were to scan, say, a city, you'd see the topography and see the buildings that are there, see all kinds of things. It's very dense, and requires a lot of information to be processed, which makes it very slow.
Oh, okay.
Now, in that being the case, if you are driving, remember that the vehicle is not is moving while it is still trying to make decisions. Mm-hmm. So if the information that is being processed is a bit too heavy for the processor, then it means that the processor can't make real-time decisions.
True.
Which is a problem. Mm-hmm. Which is a problem if you're driving at 60 and there are kids, you know, and there are all other objects and there are other cars on the road. Mm-hmm. You can't take that long to make a decision. You need to be, you know, on your feet as far as your decisions are. And then radar we know about, which is radio waves. And, you know, if you have a car that has lane keep assist and that adaptive cruise control, it will have radar, it will have those blind spot monitoring things. Yeah. But it gets, you know, very light information because it's only checking what is in front of you and what is next to you and all that kind of things. That is very quick, but it's not a lot of information that you can use to make a decision. Mm. So that's why this CNN came in, which is basically AI.
Okay.
Now, if with this AI, the issue now becomes that it gets confused very easily.
Oh, okay.
Why does it get confused very easily? Because there are things like weather that affects, you know, the depth of, you know, the radar and all those things. Mm. There's things like the heat, snow, fog, and all those things that affect it. And it needs to take those things into consideration. So it's still not at the level. And also it communicates with other vehicles. So say you are driving another vehicle, it's trying to create a network where it will communicate with other cars the same way that your Rob Byrne would say to guys, if you see an accident, please report
it. Let me know. Yeah.
And then he would go on the radio and say, there's a report of a car that's stuck on the left lane or on the right lane.
Mm.
When that car passes there and that what has been reported is not there, it gets very easily confused because there's someone else who has already reported that there's a vehicle on the left lane at this intersection and that car is not there. It has moved.
Oh my.
You know, then it needs to make calculations about all those things. You know, what has happened now? What do I do next? Yeah, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah.
Then, you know, it might even stop and try and figure itself out and check what is happening or communicate back to the base and say, I got such information from so-and-so, and when I was here, I couldn't see that same thing. So what is going on? You know? That's why there's still drivers that are being put in these cars to try and, you know, reboot or give other inputs if the car becomes confused and that kind of thing.
Certainly. And I think this is what speaks to the reliability then. Obviously, I know we're still at early days, like you're saying, and they're still kind of trying to iron out and so forth. What's the reliability of autonomous or semi-autonomous vehicles that we can actually then say we'll rely on? And also considering the safety aspect, I know I was thinking, if it's technology, surely somebody can hack and you end up finding that you wanted to go home and somebody takes over and drives you off to somebody and you get kidnapped or whatever it is, you know. I mean, just maybe talk to us a bit about, will we be able to rely on these vehicles that basically are, sometimes I hope not, smarter than the actual drivers themselves?
Okay, I think my actual input on this one would be that, okay, as far as the networks are concerned, there would need to be, I think, a very strong firewall or antivirus or all those kinds of things. But also the fact that, you know, there's so much information that needs to be traveling over the air.
Mm-hmm.
Networks might not always be reliable.
True.
Not only as far as communicating back to base, but also the car itself in checking its own surroundings.
Mm-hmm.
It might not be able to figure out some things, you know, like I said, things like fog, things like snow, things like heat and all those things, they affect the car's performance itself. So external factors would only exacerbate the matter. And until those things are ironed out and we get to a stage where the network can be guaranteed to be 100% and unhackable and all those kinds of things, I don't think that we can actually speak about a car that is fully autonomous. and that is 100% reliable. We are still learning. There's still a lot that needs to be done, and there are certain things that are becoming clear the more we dig. So I think there's still a long way to go.
Yeah.
As far as we have come, I still think there's still a long way to go.
How near or far do you think is the reality, though, of a self-driving car? Not just in the Western spaces, but more so here on African soil. And also, maybe even more importantly, do you think our people are ready for that, you know, passing a vehicle and there's no one in the driver's seat?
Well, okay. I can only make an educated guess,
okay.
You know. What we know is what we know, and what we don't know at this moment. I think as far as 2014, there was a lot that we didn't know then that we know now, and there's still a lot that we still need to learn. For example, lawmakers need to come into the picture and tell us what they think would be the minimum requirements in order for them to say, yes, this car is 100% ready for our people. Bearing in mind that, you know, even our driving styles and our level of education, level of competency, level of whatever are different. So if I was to say to you, please ensure that ABC is checked before you take off on a trip. Who would be the one who would be monitoring those things? For example, we've all been to driving school and we know what the book says about what you should check before you go on your trip. But how many of us actually do that on a daily basis? You only do that when you're on a going on a long trip because you know that if you get stuck way out there, there's going to be, you know, so much discomfort or inconvenience. But as far as your day-to-day trips are concerned, many of us just, you know, get in the car because yesterday I left it, it was working. I put in the key and it starts and I'm off. As long as there's fuel, I'm going. So there's so many things to consider because the what do we say? The implications of those things is not just a matter of, you know, okay, I said you must check this and you didn't check it. Okay, and I said, no, too bad, or no one checked it. If there's like an accident, a giant pileup of 100 cars, 100 electric cars or 100 autonomous cars, somebody needs to, you know, take the blame for that. I'm not sure that manufacturers will be able to say, no, yes, it's my car that did this. Or lawmakers would be able to say, yes, actually, we'll take the fall for it, or those kinds of things. There's still a lot that needs to be discussed and sorted out before we can get to a stage where we think that, you know, cars
are ready for
roadworthy
that.
Or, yes, ready for that.
But are we ready, though, even if we're to, you know, dot all those I's and cross over all those T's? Do you think we are ready to say, no, 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 I think it's safe enough. Let's jump into one.
Well, I think technology has a way of we have a way of adapting very quickly to technology.
Yeah.
I mean, think of 10 years or 15 years ago, 20 years ago, when there were no cell phones and how you communicated with your friends after they left class. And, you know, somehow you would be able to meet your friend after class without a cell phone. Now you can't even think about it, you know, the fact that, you know, now cell phones are so ingrained in our lives. But we will get to a stage where autonomous cars will be a part of our lives,
right?
And we will be thinking about our grandparents and thinking, how did they ever survive? Or some of us will be missing those cars that, you know, we used to drive and you had full control of what you were doing. Because the car will be dictating to you what the law says and what the road conditions dictate for and all those things. So as far as people are concerned, I think that once all the issues have been ironed out, I think people are the last to worry about. We are quite adaptable.
True.
I think we'll be able to take on the technology and fly with it.
I think that's one thing that we've always, I mean, I remember a time as you were mentioning about cell phones and they're like, you know, it's like, oh, this is the devil. Can't carry the devil in your pocket. But today, everybody's got a piece of phone and we're all scrambling for the latest technology. I certainly do agree that we kind of a bit forgetful when it comes to those kind of things. And we quickly jump onto whatever is then the latest trend. Maybe let's look at some of the positives, or hopefully they are the positives. Looking at the environmental effect, what are some of the environmental pros of using these self-driving cars? Are there any benefit for them? And if maybe are there some negatives in terms of the environment? I know, for example, people would speak about EVs being very clean and good for the energy, no emissions. But actually to make those batteries, we forget that that actually kind of outweighs all the emissions the vehicle is going to be using in its lifetime if it was a fossil fuel based. Talk to us about the environment. Are they good for us?
Well, as far as the, you know, the technology itself, yes, would be great for the environment. Mm-hmm. I mean, if we can save a life, that's one family that could be enjoying each other until death do them part under natural circumstances.
Okay.
If a claim that is not taken into insurance for a life that has been taken is a good thing for a family somewhere.
True.
A route that we have saved, maybe the car has suggested to you that, no, if you actually you go this way, you'll save 5 kilometers. If there's 10 of those cars, 20 of those cars, 50 million of those cars, and we have saved 5 kilos each from those trips, I mean, that would be, you know, very good for the environment and the ozone layer that we haven't been speaking about for so long.
Nice.
But as far as the execution of those things is concerned, I think there's still a lot that needs to be done. For example, your ordinary car that is supposedly technology laden doesn't have so many cameras, or it has cameras that can monitor the surrounding and check whether you're safe or not. All those things, they are very nicely incorporated into the car. And, you know, if you look at the cars that have been out there being tested, they need extra equipment that is much heavier than what the car comes with. So they would put a radar on the top of the car, put extra cameras where the mirrors are, put other cameras wherever else they think that they need information from. All those things are extra materials that need to be put into this car. And, you know, you can't charge a lot more. You can't charge 2 million or 3 million for a car like that. I mean, the prices of those cameras need to be recouped from somebody, yes. But you can't charge, you know, you can't ask for a blank check from buyers. So there's still a lot that needs to be done, because before a technology is widely accepted, I mean, somebody needs to foot that bill. And at the moment, I see that there's hundreds of billions that were used by governments and by certain manufacturers, and some of them have pulled back because they what they thought was the challenge has changed. The beast has morphed into something else that they did not know back then. And they have decided that, no, I think this is not for us, and we're going to pull out. And it's the likes of the Googles and the other tech companies which still want to go this route. And I understand that for them, it's more about providing transport and safe transport for their employees more than it is about saving the environment and anything like that. It's more about their own sustainability as companies, not about the environment or anything like that. So there's still a long way for us to go before we can say this is environmentally friendly. And sometimes, you know, things that we do in the here now tend to be harmful in the long term. So we don't know at the moment.
Yeah, that is quite something. It's 9:45, 8:00 as we are drawing to the close. You're tuned into the Business Sense right here on Adventist World Radio, SID Media. I'm currently in conversation. It's a Tech Tuesday conversation with Mr. Emma Nyirenda, looking at the reliability of self-driving cars. Is it something that you yourself would consider hopping into? You know, if you say it's in the next year or two, it's available for you and you can get one. Would you consider owning one of those vehicles, driving it around, or rather driving in it around as it will be driving itself? Talk to us on +27 73 470 3520. Now, Iman, as we wrap it up for today, what would then be your counsel? You know, I'm just trying to think who you'd picture as having this. We're talking about people warming up to this idea. And I'm thinking maybe it's your more tech-savvy young individuals who will jump into these vehicles, the ones who are more, curious, the ones who are more adventurous, perhaps the ones who are not as hooked up on life and the sanctity thereof. What would be the advice you'd want to give to people to say, as preparation? You know, I mean, I'm looking at the technology we kind of possess today, the cruise control. Sometimes when people are on cruise control, they really tend to lax, and you know, you're not as alert as you should be on the road. You're not as attentive and responsive. You know, you talk about lane keeper assist, you even think, I don't need to steer so much, the car would do it. What would be the advice you'd want to give to people just to be aware, as this technology, like you said earlier on, it is coming, it's just a matter of time, and we will be having to adapt to it. What's your take on that as we wrap it up?
Well, I think technology is great and everything. What I foresee, as you know, perhaps days get longer because people are trying to put in more work. Somebody might get into the car and think, well, if I'm going to go home, I want to spend time with my wife. I still have this assignment that I need to do before I get home, and I can give my attention to my wife or my partner. You could spend those few minutes in traffic, because we do spend a lot of time in traffic.
True.
You know, finishing up whatever it is that you need to finish up, and then you get home, you know, you give your wife or your husband or your children the full attention that they deserve, and no laptops in the bedroom, no assignments at the dinner table, you know, that kind of thing. Would be a great positive, yes. But on the other hand, I foresee also a situation where if somebody is not that driven or not that, busy, what would they do, or what would they fill those extra hours in traffic with? It would be social media, which we have been told is something that we need to really pay attention to, because there's so much that is, you know, going on out there and that we need to guard against. So it has its positives and it has its negatives. So on the one hand, it could help us all as a society, you know, perhaps while you're in traffic, you could make a phone call, call your mom, call your dad, do that kind of thing, and catch up with everybody, or read a book that you've been putting aside or procrastinating on, or do something, you know, with those 2 hours that you've spent in traffic, or that you should have spent in traffic. But on the other hand, if you're going to be watching TikTok, you know, for the next 2 hours, I mean, you're filling your head with so many things, you know. Yes.
Maybe that's at least the 2 hours, you know, you never had time to go on TikTok. At least here you can have check those WhatsApp statuses that you will always put off.
Yeah,
I hear you. I hear you.
So it really needs for us to pay attention to how we spend that time.
No, thank you so much. And thank you once again for taking the time to talk to us and the listeners. And I think you've quite given us some valuable information and something to look out for, but also cautioned us on what is needing to be done in place before we get to that stage where we say, here we go, a self-driving car is around the corner. Thank you so much again once again. And before we let you go, any final thoughts on the conversation?
No, it's my pleasure, Derek. Anytime, anything that has to do with cars, gets my blood boiling. or gets me all excited, rather. So anytime you want to talk about cars and latest developments, I'm here. Autonomy is the way to go, it seems.
Wonderful stuff. Thank you so much once again, Iman, and may God bless you and have yourself a great evening further.
You too.
You are tuned into Business Sense on Adventist World Radio, powered by SID Media.